The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. This is Tuesdays with Brady Quinn and LeJ Newsomal. New time, noon on Wednesdays. This episode of Pick Six, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Dudes and Brady, what's up, fellas?
What up? Has everybody recovered from the West Coast time yet?
Oh,
no, I'm glad you asked.
Or the Vegas flu.
Mm. So I would say no on both counts. My voice is gradually getting better. Yesterday I had a tennis ball underneath my butt working my sciatic nerve, which I know sounds a little weird, but I was rolling it while podcasting. Today I have two ice packs up against the back of my pelvis because my sciatic nerve has been so bad from possibly falling in falling in the slime. Yeah, we're looking into personal injury workers comp. I want to keep mentioning that. Also from
Jay, do we have a lawsuit on our hands, Will?
Maybe.
Oh my god.
I'm telling you, okay, so like when I ended up going to the Sphere on Friday before I left town to see you two, which I guess I should mention as part of the workers comp thing.
I was about to say you might not want to put that out there.
Is this after the slime?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, so
after the slime, so you can't. Right, exactly. But I think I can say we were sitting in a sports book. We weren't betting on these sports, but we were sitting in a sports book having beers before going. And I was telling like EK and some of the other guys, and I was like, I'll be honest, I'm starting to get a little sore and I'm kind of woozy. And they're like, okay. I'm just telling you, like, yeah, maybe I suffered a concussion as a result of, you know, CBS. Who knows? All I'm saying is that I got banged up in Vegas. I'm pretty sure I had some version of – I felt as bad as I felt since February of 2020 when I left the Miami Super Bowl for a full week last week. That's why I missed the show. I was just – I mean, just bad off. You didn't want to see me. Having said that, Vegas was pretty awesome in terms of a Super Bowl location. What did you guys think?
I loved it, man. I was going to ask you guys this. We talked about this a little bit last week, or this was like a topic of discussion, I should say. Would you guys want to see the Super Bowl in Vegas every year? Because I thought it was actually a really great host city, and it feels like no one would be upset if the Super Bowl was just held in Vegas every single year.
It makes too much sense, right? That's one of the few cities in the U.S. that has the infrastructure to actually handle that many people at one time. We know F1 is already there. They have multiple different concerts that they throw on year round. So for it to be in Vegas, it never fit. I mean, like, there was a little bit of traffic because, you know, where our set was literally right on Las Vegas Boulevard, right in front of the Bellagio fountains. But besides that little area, the traffic actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So you just know with the space that Vegas has, the infrastructure, all the hotels that they have more than enough space to be the host every year. Now, the one caveat to that, Brady, and I don't think a lot of people expected this, it gets kind of cold in the winter in the desert. Like, people, I don't think we're ready for that, especially at night with the wind picking up. Other than that, I think Vegas was the perfect host city.
I'm so, not sure what their advantage would be, by the way. Is that like the Raiders make it to a Super Bowl? Like, they still got a lot of work to do before that happens within their own division, let alone make it to a Super Bowl.
I mean, is it an unfair advantage of the Chiefs? Because Mahomes
you could do a rev share model through that being hosted there every single year. I think the biggest thing is it wouldn't incentivize owners to want to build or really teams to build new stadiums, right? Because it feels like if they build it, the Super Bowl will come.
It will come.
At least one, right? So that's usually part of the deal. I think that's the only caveat that you'd have to be concerned by if indeed the NFL went that direction. I'll tell you this much, though. It would open up the floodgates for basically saying, like, yeah, we're pretty comfortable with being in the gambling, the betting mecca of the United States, right?
Yeah. I would say this. I think that my overall take on Vegas, and I know we're like, you know, 10 days removed from it, but, you know, we didn't get to hash it out after last week because of the Vegas flu. Is that the first couple of days when it was raining and really cold, just specifically to what we had to do with where our CBS sets were, it was kind of a miserable experience because you were like kind of restricted to, well, I mean, I'm just saying it was when we got there, I got there on Sunday and I was shocked by the number of people that were still there. I was shocked by like just how crowded it was, but it wasn't the Super Bowl sort of vibe. The first, like Monday and Tuesday, really rainy, really cold, kind of like, all right, this is not ideal. Weather cleared up on Wednesday, and then and then you saw the typical the ramp up for Super Bowl week where – and then Friday I was like, I don't want to leave this town. This has like – to me it had very much New Orleans vibes in terms of a Super Bowl city where, like, when you go to New York or Los Angeles, those cities to me feel as if they're like, that's cool that you're here. But, you know, we got to keep on keeping on. We're LA and New York. Like, New York was like wanted to like minimize how much it was embracing the Super Bowl because it's like we're the Big Apple. It's like you can throw the Super Bowl here. We don't really notice. New Orleans and Vegas are like, yeah, this is like football Mardi Gras. Come on in to party.
You know what would be interesting is almost if you could figure out a way of basically pinging it between like selfishly, I would love to see Miami be like another host city. And then Vegas be like the West Coast host city. And then you could have, all right, and you could make this either via whoever the number one overall seed is.
Oh, spicy. I don't know if you have enough time for it, but I like this idea.
You make it the Pro Bowl. Whoever went, then that's how you could go. Now, the Pro Bowl is too close, so it probably wouldn't work in that, you know, in that manner. But you could figure out a way of making this so whatever teams award, they get the pick. That number one overall seed gets to pick the venue, so their fan base may be closer. Maybe they have a little better turnout, whatever the case may be. That'd be pretty sweet to kind of ping pong it back between those two particular venues. Just because, look, everyone's going to love to go to South Florida. They did a tremendous job with it. And we know, by the way, if there is a global pandemic, they'll still be able to put on the event. And then,
oh my God,
Vegas.
Or launch the event. Launch the global pandemic. Either way.
But then you've got, you know, Vegas, which again is a great host city. And you know, it was odd to the first 2 days. It didn't feel like the Super Bowl's out there yet. And I don't know if that was more weather or if it was early in the week. But once Wednesday hit and the weather turned, that place turned up and it was awesome.
And it does matter that, like, San Francisco, the 49ers fans were a big factor, I thought. And Chiefs fans showed up too, but like, yeah, it was like 2-1. Yeah, 2-1, totally reasonable. Let me ask you this: there was a report, I believe, in like some Las Vegas like media company reported that a former player was bit by a wolf in the desert. I'm just curious which one.
It was coyote, supposedly. But, yeah, I don't know if that was true.
Was it you, dudes, or was it you, Brady? Which
one? I didn't report that. I heard supposedly it was an ex-player that was bit by a coyote out there in the wilderness.
Like in my free time, I was out golfing. Like I had three run right on by. They were probably.
Did you play golf in Vegas?
I did, of course.
You did.
Every time I can.
I guess you had your radio show at 3 a.m. local time.
Yeah, I get a little extra time on my hands for these West Coast Super Bowls when I start at 3 a.m. You know, like I say, my morning is everyone else's last night. So there you go.
I almost called you as we were going to bed while pitching the sales team on a podcast idea. Because I was like, Brady's waking up. We can call him. They were like, you can't call Brady Quinn. I was like, if I called Brady right now, he would answer and be one. You'd be thrilled if I called you at 2 a.m.
Why not? I mean, I'm already up anyway. I have to work in an hour.
You'd be like, you'd put me on speaker and like find a way to record. You'd like hit record and be like, go on, Will. Keep talking.
The best part was my producer for our radio show. When we walked to the lobby of Mandalay Bay where we ended up staying, there'd be like a band live performing. I actually caught him out on stage singing along with this band one of the days. And it had already been like 2 or 3 days into the week. So I'm pretty sure he tied one on. Yeah. But I literally walked by and I was like, that's our producer. We have a show in 30 minutes. And he's singing along with this band
in
the middle of this, like a little, you know, entertainment area at 2:30 a.m. in the morning. So I'm like, I'm not sure if he just stayed out the whole night and stayed up or if he just happened to walk down.
Did
and
he said, produce the show?
Yes, he still produced the show.
Was he coherent?
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely think he still has some alcohol in the system. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would actually like to that incorrigible gossip Pete Prisco likes to talk about. He's like, Princeton was going huge out of the Super Bowl. You know, quite frankly, I think Pete's kind of a cuck. And then two, like, keep my name out of your mouth, Pete. And three, like, I didn't even stay up past 2 in the morning one time in Las Vegas. I would have been at 9:30 one night, Vegas time. Like, I don't want this nonsense being, like, Pete, you know what we're talking about. Pete talks, too. He's a gossip.
Let me say this, though, about Pete, because I don't believe that to be true either, Will. I mean, we did get to spend a few moments together, which was very lovely. Got to catch up a little bit. Pete was a stick in the mud. He didn't go out any of the nights. He was invited to dinner. He was invited to dinner. He didn't even want to go out for that. By the way, the dinner was at 5:30, and he said it was too late for him because he didn't want to mess up his stomach. So
he didn't want to leave the hotel. He was like, it's traffic. I don't want to get into traffic.
and he's walking everywhere. In fact, this restaurant was walking distance to where his hotel was. And so I was like, dude, you are the least fun person of our entire CBS crew, podcast, whoever, is Pete Prisco. So I would not pay any attention whatsoever to what Pete said.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Because the only reason why I didn't go is because I had an event to go to right when they had the dinner. So I was going to go because I think it was DK. DK was the one that set the dinner up. He was like, I know it's early, guys, but if you guys want to meet up, go to dinner. I was like, I wish, man. I got an event I could go to. If you could push it back later, I could go. He was like, nah, that's the only reservation they have. And Pete was like, I'm not leaving the hotel. I'm not getting into that traffic.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, that was the other thing, too, is you could kind of walk, like, Friday night was a little tough in terms of transportation, especially on the strip.
Friday and Saturday were the only bad days. Other than that, you literally could walk or drive anyway without any issues.
Yeah, we didn't have any trouble really getting around, which is frankly fantastic. I will say one more thing, and then we'll move on. We'll talk divisions and rank the coaches in the various divisions. The Sphere, holy crap.
I'm so glad I never get to go do it, man.
It is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life in terms of a concert venue.
What makes it so cool?
Like what they can do with the visuals behind the band is insane. Like at one point you think you're standing in the desert because they've got this like the Las Vegas desert behind you. They put the strip behind you and it was like moving cars and it looks realistic. I can send you some videos or some pictures from it. It's like it's insane what they can do in there. Highly recommend if anyone's into visual entertainment at a concert to go check that out.
Before we move on, is it a thing if you're a little claustrophobic that it could be a bit much?
I would be more worried about heights than claustrophobic.
Okay, yeah. I did hear that. Yeah, I did hear that.
In fact, you don't feel claustrophobic at all because it feels very open. Okay. But the heights, like I was 200 level, and this was Friday night.
No big deal. What up, 200 level?
You know how much it was for 200 level tickets, like an hour before the show? $100.
That's it?
Yeah.
I thought that would be way more than that.
I didn't really want to see you two, but I wanted to see the Sphere. But me and my buddy Dallas was like, all right, it's $100 to get in. We're going to the show.
That makes sense.
But yeah, so like 400 level, I've heard, is really steep and kind of like.
By the way, tell me you're 40 plus and white. If by going to one concert, it'd be you two.
They're the only. I don't even really like you two, and like, but like, I mean, I like some of their Hatch Young Baby stuff. think some of their older stuff.
Yeah, I love how you like hid the actual concert, who it was, until just now. Like,
yeah, we went to the Spear.
They're the only band playing. It's not like I had options here. Yeah. All right. You know what? I'm going to time out these breaks correctly. Let's take a quick break. That's all we did was talk Vegas. That was fun, though. I like talking Vegas with you guys. Top three Super Bowl cities.
Ooh.
After having been to Vegas, dudes, what are your top three? I'll go first. I'll say New Orleans 1, Vegas is still 2. And then I have this weird partiality towards Phoenix.
Phoenix actually wasn't bad last year. Yeah, it was under radar.
But I mean, Miami probably the real number three there.
Yeah, my three would be I'm actually going to go Vegas 1, Miami 2, Houston 3.
Oh,
Houston!
I had a great time in Houston Super Bowl.
That's the first two of mine are the same. I think I'm actually switching. I'll say Miami 1, Vegas 2, but they're almost a 1A, 1B.
Right. You guys not high on New Orleans?
No, like not.
New Orleans is a small city, man. Like it's gonna be clustered next year, man.
No, not looking forward to that. You know what? I'm gonna say 3, Atlanta. I loved Atlanta.
That's an under radar one too.
That was like super, super well done. Everything was centralized. Yeah. The stadium's super nice. The hotels, everything's right there. Yeah. I really, really enjoyed Atlanta as another Super Bowl venue as far as how it was handled. Phoenix would be up there too. I just thought it was a little bit spread out.
Phoenix is spread out a little bit. Yeah.
If you got to Scottsdale, because everything was downtown or if you got to Scottsdale with the golf tournament going on at the same time, you were stuck. Like you were there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was the hard part about Phoenix.
The funny thing is, I was actually staying down there by the waste management. I actually didn't have too much of an issue getting out. Now, one day was bad. Way,
though. You weren't trying to get in.
Oh, I
spent the night in Scottsdale one night. But that's another story for another day. and you wouldn't believe me if I said it out loud. So Pete was right about that one. Anyway, those are our Super Bowl rankings.
Beat the local snitch.
Yeah, he's an incorrigible gossip. He loves to push off. Pete, he's too old to like party anymore. So he's like loves to push it off on me. Anyway, let's take a break. When we come back, we're gonna rank division coaching staffs. Next.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, so we are going to rank the coaching staffs in each of the divisions in the NFL. All caveats that you guys would like to apply, we can apply here right now. I think, yes,
the first one would be the head coach has to be weighted, right? Like the head coach is leading the way.
Yeah.
Like two good coordinators can't save the head coach, can they?
Correct. I would agree with that.
Okay.
I also think if we're talking about a first year head coach, like Deuce and I were talking before while you were getting wired up, like we don't know a lot about the Patriots coaching staff,
right?
At all. And so, like, if we say the Patriots have the worst coaching staff in the AFC East, that's not us saying they stink and the Patriots will be awful and Gerard Mayo won't work out. But I mean, you kind of just have to rank a brand new coaching staff at the bottom.
You just give a year. It's unknown. Like it's
year and I. Yeah. Like Mayo could be incredible.
But that would be I for incredible, right? You know what I'm saying? But I guess you're unbelievable. So
that's true. Bill Belichick obviously was at the top of the AFCs for a long, long time. Now he can't even get a job. That to me is like that's the wildest. It's kind of being underplayed. People are like, yeah, of course he can't get a job. Bill Belichick not being able to get a job is nuts, man.
I don't know if it's that so much as like people obviously being concerned about their own well-being and trying to not, you know, get fired and not have him to have control over top of them.
That's fair. That's fair.
You know, but well, again,
I know Brady, we had this conversation too. And I just, you know, I was stating earlier in the offseason when they decided to part ways and people just assumed that the Atlanta job was going to be his. And I was telling people, I think when owners, you know, look back and they look at Bill Belichick and they're seeing the way that the NFL culture is right now, like, is his way of the Bill Belichick, you know, Patriot way conducive to, you know, developing young men in today's NFL? I think Atlanta looked at that for a while. And then to your point also, Brady, he wanted some power. And I don't think they were willing to just give him all that power right away as well, because his track record as a GM hadn't been as great lately, you know. So
Arthur, I think that Blank was might have the been. Reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Rich McKay and Terry Fontenot probably were like, I'd like to have final say, not
exactly. You know. So I think that played a role in it. And then also, like I said, the way that the NFL is moving, is it conducive to the way that he coaches? I think that was another part of, you know, maybe a team not wanting to give him all that power or bring him in as a head coach.
Yeah,
I think there are definitely some, and it's a great point when we talk about who's being hired as a coach, who the coach is reporting to, who the GM is reporting to, how there's a lot of like real life office politics that go into NFL coaching staffs.
Everything, right? That's everything. Yeah, like, that's every life. Organization, every company, you know. So that becomes part of how the owner, you know, ends up handling that. And it sounds like Arthur Blank anointed Rich McKay and Terry Fontenot to say, you guys, you know, find someone you want to work with, feel comfortable with, and Raheem Morris ended up being the right fit for them. I'm more bothered by every organization that had the chance to interview Bill Belichick that didn't. Like,
yeah,
you literally could have talked to the greatest coach of all time, got something, some nugget, something from him, and you decided not to? Like, just because, I mean, like, there's nothing wrong with bringing him in and having a conversation with him, right? Like, this is your one opportunity to do that fresh off his time in New England, regardless of where, you know, to Leger's, you know, comment about where maybe coaching is now and development is now, that's irrelevant. Like, I look at it and say, like, I just want to come in and pick his brain. Like, he's coached for so long, been more successful than anyone else. Maybe there are elements of what he's done that we can implement in our organization and then apply that moving forward. We don't have to do it exactly how he did it. We could take pieces of that. The fact that you have all these other openings that didn't even want to entertain an interview with him, like, that's where I feel like if I was an owner, I'd look at everyone who was a part of that process and be like, shame on you, man. Like, if this doesn't work out, you're out. I'm going to find the next guy who hopefully will be Bill Belichick.
Yeah. Okay. But to your point, I think that was part of the issue, right, Brady? They were worried about him coming in, ruffling feathers and potentially asking for final say on things. And if you're a GM or a president, you're like, look, I kind of want the final say on things, right? Because I'm the GM. I don't want Bill Belichick coming in here and just turning everything over and he's getting the final say.
That oozes insecurity to me, though. But hey, let's rank that list. I think this one's relatively easy, right? Because we talked about
it's either Sean McDermott or Mike McDaniel. One, I think 1A, 1B with Sean McDermott and Mike McDaniel. Sean McDermott's longer success. I think McDermott's won easily, personally.
Yeah, McDermott's won. There's nothing wrong with saying this. McDermott has won the AFC East the past 4 years. Like,
correct.
He's number one. He's got a stronghold on that. I think the thing that Sean McDermott deserves credit for is the fact that he made a coaching change during the season. You know, we went to Joe Brady. Joe Brady did a fantastic job revamping the offense in season, which is hard to do. And he took over the defense when Leslie Frazier steps down before the season, and they still make the playoffs. They still win the division. He's number one. McDaniel's number two. And then you've got Robert Saleh at three. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know that Jerod Mayo is going to be that far behind him, because I feel like outside of the job that Robert Saleh has done, kind of holding together the defense, holding together a lot of like stars and personalities and guys together through a lot of adversity. You also could look back at some of the decisions he's made, whether it's Zach Wilson centered or maybe some other pieces they've got, and feel like, man, he didn't manage that overly well. So that order that we've got it in, you know, is Robert Saleh up a spot, but Jerod Mayo down one.
Yep. I would say this. It's interesting when you look at this division, right? Because going into last year, I think a lot of people pegged this as the best division in football. But then when you look at the coaching staffs and some of the issues down the stretch where you see Mike McDaniel and Vic Fangio, supposedly the players weren't buying into what he was selling down there in Miami. He ends up getting fired. You look at McDermott making a offensive coordinator change, like you said, and And I would push back on this with McDermott, because when you look at his roster on paper, I would say within the last 3 or 4 years, you would have to agree that it's probably a top 2 or 3 roster in the NFL, and they have not been able to get out of the AFC Championship. Now, much. Again,
I mean,
I'm not this year, but if you're talking about the two or three previous years, you wouldn't agree with that?
It's a top 5 roster, but he's also had a big hand in assembling it, too. So I think you got to give him credit for that. Like, he's involved in personnel.
If we're going to play that game, right, because he also has the answer to a GM that works really well, with Robert Saleh, like, Brady, you know this more than most people in the world. Like, a lot of times a coach has to coach a team that's assembled for him. Like, he may have some say, but he doesn't get to make those picks or bring in the free agents that essentially that he wants. I remember vividly I've been on a team where a head coach and the GM didn't agree, but the GM was like, these two players are going to be on this team no matter what, and these other two players are getting cut, and that, you just got to deal with it. Like, I think that's the thing a lot of people
Was that Rex and Doug?
I know firsthand experience about guys that got cut that the head coach did not want to get cut, and two other guys that had to stay on the team that the head coach did not want on the team. To your point, again, Robert Saleh and the Jets, they know it's do or die this year. I don't know if I would put them at 4, Brady, just because we don't, like we said, the unknown.
I didn't say I'd put them at 4. I'm putting them at 3, but they're not. Like, Jerod Mayo could easily have a great season, and if they finish ahead, like, after 1 year, you'd have to put them ahead of Robert Saleh, would you not?
I would also say, if you look at Miami and Buffalo Bills, the quarterback situation has been a lot different than it has been with the New York Jets.
That's true, too. All right.
Robert Saleh's doing, but.
It's not on the head coach all the time to pick the roster.
I think generally the Bills and the Dolphins, a drop-off Jets, and then the unknown that is Jerod Mayo. That's sort of that division.
There's an unknown, though, in the fact of how you go about handling who's starting, who's not. Like, once you get into the season, when you've got a guy up there and, like, you're benching Zach, then you're putting back out.
I can agree with that.
The way that was managed, I think if he could go back and do it again, they might have handled it differently.
For sure.
To the NFC East. Because I told Harry we had plenty of time. I thought the AFC was we have one new head coach in Dan Quinn who we can sort of – like, I don't know how you want to slot him out, because he has been a head coach before. He's been to a Correct. Super Bowl. He brings in Cliff Kingsbury, former head coach, as his offensive coordinator. You got change in Philly with Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio in to boost up Nick Sirianni. Certainly helps that coaching staff. Brian Schottenheimer with Mike McCarthy, and now Mike Zimmer replaces Dan Quinn. So, you talk about some incestual, like, coordinator moves here. The former Cowboys OC is now with the Eagles. Zimmer back to replace the guy who's now the head coach of Washington. This is a hard one.
This is an intriguing one.
I think it's McCarthy 1 for me. Okay. I would then have to put Sirianni, and in part because of what he's done so far in his short tenure, right, but also his OCDC. I think Vic Fangio, Kellen Moore are proven.
Yes.
And then you look at, I think, Dan Quinn 3rd, because he's been to a Super Bowl.
I was going
to
say that too.
And then you got Brian Daboll, who's also taken a team to the playoffs, though, when a lot of people didn't find the Giants 2 years ago a Super Bowl or a playoff team. Yeah. But unfortunately, he'd have to put him at 4, right? Just sheerly based on the short tenure he's had.
Well, when I look at this, and I'm with you, Brady, I think you stated it perfectly before we started this ranking. Like, the head coach is the, I won't say end all be all, but, like, that's the major factor in deciding, like, who has the better coaching staff. And then you look at Mike McCarthy, right? Won a Super Bowl with Green Bay. He's gone to the playoffs, 3 straight years with the Dallas Cowboys. And then you look at Mike Zimmer, right? Is known to be a great defensive-minded coach. You bring him in after you lose Dan Quinn to go to the Commanders. And Brian Schottenheimer has been a coach. Family, they grew up in football, right? And then Nick Sirianni, the big question for him last year, he lost both coordinators. And then he kind of hired 2 inexperienced guys, right? And we saw how that hurt the Philadelphia Eagles. Well, he rectified that by getting 2 very experienced guys and bringing in Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio. Now, me and Brady had a discussion, I think, like last week. And my question is kind of like with Bill Belichick, because the issues in Miami with Vic Fangio was, like, things that he was asking players to do, they weren't comfortable with. And he was setting his ways and saying, this is how we're going to do it. Like, is that going to work with the personalities and with the Philadelphia Eagles? And we've already seen the thing with A.J. Brown happen this year. Now, again, that's not on his side of the ball, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of different characteristics with the Philadelphia Eagles as far as those players and how strong, I won't say strong-willed they are,
but there's a lot of superstar players on that team. Like, I wonder how that, you know, relationship is going to work. I put Brian Daboll at four because it was crazy, Brady. We had this discussion after the article came out with the Jets, right? And if the thing that happened with Brian Daboll and Wink Martindale happened with the Jets, like, people would still be talking about that. But because it's the Giants, they aren't. And then there was rumors that him and Mike Kafka weren't getting along either. And so potentially Mike Kafka was going to leave and go be an offensive coordinator somewhere else. So I think for that factor alone, just because of the dissension in that home base, I would put them at four.
I think you have to say that Brian Daboll is still, just because of what happened last season, like, I think this is a very high floor division in terms of the coaching. But like, Brian Dable's a bigger unknown than Dan Quinn, more than likely. We have more experience seeing Dan Quinn as head coach. Yeah. So I agree with you. I think Dan Quinn three, Brian Daboll four in terms of those coaching staffs. I think that what Mike McCarthy showed, getting rid of Kellen Moore and the way he ran that offense, how Dak Prescott played, I think Tony Pollard could be due for a bounce back, how CeeDee Lamb played, that you can very justifiably say that McCarthy and Schottenheimer, even with like, or an upgrade or a big step up from Sirianni and Kellen Moore. And I think Zimmer and Fangio are pretty similar in terms of aggressive, cranky old man who, you know, like, we'll see how the defense adjusts to that. So I agree with you guys on the order. I think that's a pretty solid setup.
NFC East is the grumpier old men division on defense.
I mean, on offense too. I mean, Dable and Sirianni are kind of grumpy old men. This is a pretty
middle-aged men.
Dable looks like a frat dude who's got like two kids and is screaming at them while they're playing soccer. Like, they're like two 10-year-old kids.
Will Ferrell in the Fraternity movie.
Yeah, old school. Love old school.
Old school, yeah.
All right, let's move to the AFC West, where, I mean –
I think number one is easy.
Number one's easy, and then I'm gonna give you my two and three because I think it's gonna be most controversial. Okay.
I don't think so. I think I'm with you, Brady, because I already know where you're going with this.
Okay. Ooh. Obviously, Antonio Pierce, interim head coach, not much experience, so we put him at four.
Yes.
So that takes care of that. So then it's between Sean Payton and Jim Harbaugh. I'm giving the edge to Jim Harbaugh.
Damn.
Even though it was a short stint. He still went to, what, three NFC championship games, all right? Did go to a Super Bowl. He's won a national championship. I think he, to me, I'd put slightly ahead of Sean Payton, even though Sean Payton has a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Even though Sean Payton's won numerous NFC South division titles and all that, and I think part of it's the fact that he had – Drew Brees for the entirety of his time there with the Saints. And I'm not saying that Sean Payton was a part of that, obviously. He was. But Drew Brees obviously is like a first ballot Hall of Famer quarterback. So it lends itself to like that Brady Belichick argument, Sean Payton, Drew Brees. And after watching last year in Denver, you're kind of like, all right. So maybe it's too small of a sample size to give that a step ahead to Jim Harbaugh. But I just think he's a good football coach. I don't care where you put him. He's going to eventually build something and find a way to win a championship. If not for the lights going out in that Super Bowl, I don't know. Maybe San Francisco does end up winning it all.
Yeah, I'm with you too, Brady. And I think a lot of people would say this is a little controversial just because Sean Payton does have the ring. But to your point, like, when Drew Brees came to New Orleans, people tend to forget he was actually a pretty good quarterback. He was just coming off an injury. It wasn't like he developed into some great player. Like, he was actually a pretty good quarterback already. Now, again, he did help in that development, but we look at Jim Harbaugh and what he did with Alex Smith and then Colin Kaepernick. And then, to your point, he's won every place he's been,
whether it's
University of San Diego, whether it's Stanford, whether it's Michigan, right? And then he's done it with Greg Roman before. So you talk about the continuity. Now, again, I know Joe Lombardi was with Sean Payton forever, literally, in New Orleans. But I'm with you. Just because Jim Harbaugh has won every place he's been, I give him the slight edge. And then you look at it, right, with the tools that, you know, he has now with having a guy like Justin Herbert. I don't think he's ever had a quarterback like that. So you can only imagine what he could potentially do with Herbert.
The last thing, I think, if you incorporate the staffs, all right, Greg Roman's a little more tenured than Lou Getsy is and probably has had more success, although Patrick Graham's had way more experience than Jesse Minter has. But I'm looking at the wrong one. Joe Lombardi and Vance Joseph has more experience than Jesse Minter. The hard thing for me is, like, that Broncos defense, even though it got much better the second half of the season, it did give up 70 points.
70 points.
70 points. Like, for that reason alone, I got to give a little slight edge to the Jim Harbaugh staff.
Here's the other thing. Jim Harbaugh's track record of hiring assistants is pretty freaking immaculate. Now, Greg Roman wore his welcome eventually with the offense he ran with Colin Kaepernick and then what they did with Lamar Jackson. They're not going to run that same thing with Justin Herbert. Mike McDonald, superstar new coach of the Seattle Seahawks, found by the Harbaugh brothers. He was in Baltimore, went to Michigan, and then back to Baltimore, right, and then gets a job in Seattle. You know, you look at Vic Fangio, who's talked about as one of the best defensive coordinators in football. Harbaugh guy. It wouldn't have been surprising if he'd gone to Los Angeles instead of Philadelphia. And I just think you have to – Jim Harbaugh went 22-2 in his final 2 years at San Diego with Josh Johnson. He goes and wins an Orange Bowl at Stanford. That is so hard to do. Stanford is nerd city, and he turned it into a football team, like a stud football place, right? He goes, jumps to the NFC West with the 49ers. They haven't been to the playoffs since 2002. And he takes them to three straight NFC championship games. And you're right. And he could go to three straight Super Bowls really easily, like one play away at each of those. And then, of course, had the one play. They had the Sherman Crabtree thing where he screamed at Aaron Andrews and the NFC championship game.
Yeah, basketball bag gets intercepted, yeah.
You catch the 2011 Giants. I mean, it's just like and then he goes to Michigan. It is so effing hard to go 5-7 at a school like Michigan. Brady Hoke did it the year before Harbaugh got there. Harbaugh wins double digits immediately, has him in the playoffs, flips the script on Ohio State, wins a national championship, and goes back to the NFL. Like, the guy just wins everywhere he goes, and he's going to win here. And here's the topper. I think if you ask Sean Payton right now if he'd like to switch jobs with Jim Harbaugh, he probably would. Because the Chargers have the quarterback. Right. So, yeah, I agree. I think Harbaugh over Payton. But I love Sean Payton. I think he's a great coach. Yeah. Blake Pierce is
– It's like a 2A, 2B type conversation,
yeah,
right?
For sure. Yeah. We're not going to disrespect Andy Reid by trying to force one of these guys.
I don't even think we need to talk about that.
No.
Some things don't need to be said.
But we got a lot of – a little bit of changeover.
San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan alone.
So hold on. So Mike McDonald, he goes 4. We know that. He's first-time head coach. We'll see. I put Gannon ahead of him just because he's got a year of experience, so he sits there at 3.
This is where
here's the controversial one.
Yeah.
I'm giving Shanahan the edge at 1.
Really?
McVay came from that system.
He did.
Even though McVay has the
Super Bowl. His dad's system, yeah. You're right.
I still look at Shanahan and I'm like, man, that dude's, no matter what offense he's coached, where he's been, like I look at it and just go, I still am going to give him the edge, despite the fact that he doesn't have an OC or defensive coordinator at this current moment.
It's Kyle Shanahan versus everybody.
What a 1B, but I just feel like he's the mentor. Sean McVay is kind of the mentee. Everyone gives like John Gruden credit from where McVay came from because his cadence and everything else. Yeah. Largely, he was thankful to the Shanahan tree, though.
Shanahan tree. My thing is, if Raheem Morris was still on the staff, would you give the edge to McVay then, Brady?
Well, and if Raheem Morris is still on the staff, Zach Robinson would still be on the staff.
No,
because Morris took his OC and left.
Correct.
Yeah, I said no, because Shanahan doesn't have anyone on the staff right now, and I'm still giving the edge.
That is true.
And the other thing with Kyle Shanahan, this is a coaching staff that has been rated like no other over the last 5+ years. I mean, we talk about Mike McDaniel, right, the former OC. We're going to talk about D'Amico Ryans, the former DC. Robert Saleh, former DC. There's like, I mean, and Kyle Shanahan still was a couple of plays away from winning the Super Bowl, right?
And to add that, not only the coaches have, the front office has been rated, right? Rand Carthen, Adam Peters, like Matthew what was the GM for the Commanders before? Martin Mayhew.
Oh, Martin Mayhew. Yeah.
All those guys came from San Francisco.
Look, the bottom line is that Patrick Mahomes, you know, we talk about what Bill Belichick did. Like, think about what Bill Belichick did, you know, Belichick and Brady did to various people's legacies. Kyle Shanahan has 2 Super Bowl wins and Patrick Mahomes isn't on the Chiefs, you know? I think Kyle won and Sean McVay 2, but a very close 2, and they are miles above Mike McDonald and Jonathan Gannon just right now, out of all respect.
Well, Well, this is my thing where I could say this is 1A, 1B is because Sean McVay does have the ring. And this past year, Brady, we were talking about, teams like the Houston Texans making the playoffs when nobody really thought they could. Let's not forget, nobody thought the Rams were making the playoffs. Right. I would pay $100 to most media pundits if they could name five people off of that defense this year. Yeah. Now, I can. It's because I'm a nerd and I watch a lot of film. But most people couldn't name five people off that defense this year. And what Raheem Morris and Sean McVay did development-wise is unheard of for what this team did to get to the playoffs. And we're probably a couple plays away from beating the Lions in round one. So,
I mean, I was about as high as anybody in the NFL media on the Rams before the season. And even I kind of chickened out at the end with all the Cooper Kupp injury and all that stuff and having like barely missing the playoffs. I think I had him winning nine games. I don't know anybody else who had him winning nine games. But
no, I don't think I saw anybody had him winning that many.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a Matthew Stafford honk, so I've got him winning a Super Bowl this coming year. And then we really lock in that Hall of Fame resume. Then Sean McVay flips it on Kyle. I digress. I think that ranking is good. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll dive into the South. Yeah, get down and dirty, dirty South, Brady Quinn. We will also rank our top five coaching staffs next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, we'll start in the AFC South. We're also going to rank the North Division. Don't worry, we got North covered too. Can't leave Brady's Rust Belt. You're a Rust Belt man, right?
Yeah, Rust Belt.
You love playing football in the cold.
That's what we do, man. Put football down in the cold.
Just keep moving.
Brian Callahan, number four, first time head coach. There's the caveat. The interesting thing is, I think Shane Steichen at three makes a lot of sense, only because, you know, he hasn't coached a ton either.
And we don't know what we're going to – like the Anthony Richardson thing is unknown. I do give him points for hiring Jim Bob Cooter, though. That's – you guys – I went back to my high school, the prestigious Macaulay School in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and gave a chapel talk and was able to use – the name Jim Bob Cooter in my chapel talk many years ago. And quite frankly, it's probably the highlight of my career. I'm sure that my grandfather was looking down going, what a POS you are, Will, for sneaking Cooter in during the chapel talk.
This is my thing.
Got that in the rankings because that was very necessary. Yeah. He still sits at three. D'Amico Ryan's winning a division, doing everything he did in his first year. And I think you got to give Peterson credit because he's won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Even though it was a terrible year this past year, they made the playoffs the year before. So I don't find this division that difficult, but really curious to see how high D'Amico Ryans can climb after this upcoming season.
True. I mean, Shane Steichen, I think it's – I know, like I said, according to the division, because Peterson's won a Super Bowl, D'Amico, like you said, not only won the division, but they won round one and got to round two. But Shane Steichen, what he was able to do when his number four overall pick goes down, one game out of the playoffs, they had a chance at home, week 18, to win the division. I don't think, just kind of like the Rams discussion, I don't think anybody had the Colts probably winning over like five games this year. And for them to win that many and to almost get in the playoffs, again, you can't put them in front of D'Amico because D'Amico beat him when it counted to win the division. And then also Doug Peterson, to your point, has won a Super Bowl. But Shane Steichen, I think, did a masterful job with that team. And then also Gus Bradley, I think you have to put that in as a caveat. If you look at all the D coordinators, even though D'Amico Ryans is technically the defensive coordinator because he calls the defense, Gus Bradley, what he did with that defensive line, they had a career year in sacks, I think 51 sacks. Had four guys that had eight sacks, and nobody really talked about them all year long. So,
yeah,
I think they can really rise up on this list.
I think I'm going to make the case that because of the continuity that came with retaining Bobby Slowick and the negative continuity that comes with retaining Press Taylor and the offensive schemes that they like, CJ Stroud was better than Trevor Lawrence last year. And I'm a big Trevor Lawrence guy, but I think I don't know how you would take if you're like you get this coaching staff plus this quarterback. I don't know how you take the Jaguars over the Texans. All due respect to Doug Peterson and his Super Bowl ring. I want to say D'Amico Ryans with that offensive coordinator's retention and then D'Amico calling the defense. I'm going to put him at one and Doug at two.
I would say their staff is a hell of a staff. Matt Burke, even though D'Amico calls it, he's still
a good coach.
The thing is like Doug Peterson did with a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. So that's kind of
he did have the number one seed with Carson Wentz, who should have been the MVP that year.
I'm just saying, bro, like you got to give him credit for that.
No, I think he's one right now.
I mean, that team, look, here's the deal. The Texans were 4-7 last year and got hot, won the division, flipped it to the Jaguars late in the season. Exact same thing the Jaguars did to the Titans last year. If we
moving forward, is that what you're saying? You're saying from here moving forward now, the Texans will be the better team than the Jaguars in the AFC.
No, I'm saying the Texans did the exact same thing in 2023 the Jaguars did in 2022. I wouldn't be stunned if there was some regression from the Texans. And I think the Jaguars could improve. Brian Nielsen's a nice ad, but I'm gonna take the Texans at one here to the NFC South.
You're now incorporating quarterbacks. I thought it was just about coaches.
It is just about coaches.
This was interesting to me because, like, obviously, again, Dave Canales, four, we get it. But then you sort of look at the rest of the list. Like, even though Raheem Morris has prior head coaching experience, it did not work out well in Tampa. I think he can do a much better job in Atlanta with the pieces they have. I like Zach Robinson. I know he's a good offensive mind. Yeah. Jimmy Lakes, a hell of a defensive mind, too. So I think that defense, especially with Raheem Morris, like, it's going to be solid. But just by nature of the fact that, like, given his history, you kind of have to put him at three. And then
But Dennis Allen's history isn't great either.
No, but like he's still a head coach. And this is a tough one for me. Like I think Todd Bowles, I'd still put at the top.
For sure.
And I give him the edge, especially considering they won the division this year. But like it's tight between Raheem Morris, Dennis Allen, and Todd Bowles for me.
I love that Liam Cohen hire too by Todd Bowles after losing Dave
Canales. I mean, you lose your own OC in the division. That's tough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go a little bold off the board here as well. I'm going to say number one, and all due respect to Todd Bowles, because he did a hell of a job coaching that team up. Last year they won the division, but you lose your OC in the division, and I think Dave Canales, just because the unknown has to be four. I'm going to put Raheem Morris at number one.
Wow.
With the hires he made, I think the job he did, he got hired age 32 in Tampa Bay. He was way too young. He won 10 games. There was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that I don't think people understand. Maybe some off-field stuff with Josh Freeman. He didn't pan out the way he did. He had an incredible rookie year. And the Bucs got jumpy and fired him after just three seasons. I think it's one of those situations where they probably should have shown a little bit of patience. Todd Bowles, 1B there because of the job he's done, but he's a little too conservative still for me. And I worry, do we see a step? Is Baker back? Is Mike Evans back? What about no Antoine Winfield? The Dennis Allen at three.
Are you trying to project their win total for next year?
I thought it was just all the coaching staff.
Look at the roster. We're just talking coaches. We'll stick to the script.
Raheem Morris one, Todd Bowles two, Dennis Allen three, Dave Canales four. There's my final four.
I think you have to go Todd Bowles one, man. Just because, like I said, and again, the Tampa Bay Bucs were a team, even though they had two good receivers. Again, we're not talking about the players. But I think a lot of people had penciled in the Saints to win that division last year, right? And a lot of people sprinkled some money on your Carolina Panthers, Will, because they thought the coaching staff was one of the best in the league. To me, it's Todd Bowles one, man.
Yeah, fair. Okay, let's talk about the AFC North. You can make a case that this is I mean,
it's probably the most difficult one out of everyone.
This is one of the best. You have to have John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin. You know,
I don't think it's that difficult though. Is it
really?
I think it's two. So
Who's your top?
I think it's two pods. It's two pods.
It's pod, one pod.
I was gonna say you have to say it's 1A, 1AB then, right?
Yeah. Well, but I would say, look, I'm putting Harbaugh ahead of Tomlin.
Really?
Well, yeah, because of his staff. And
I'll give you that.
I mean,
Duncan struggled in that conference championship game.
Arthur Smith's going to improve it. I think it'll be better, but like I'd say it's 1A, 1B. Look, both John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin will be Hall of Fame coaches, in my opinion. I mean, Tomlin's never had a losing season.
Yeah, that's why I thought he would be one.
I think he wasted last year because he hung on to Matt Canada. Like we all knew that was their big issue going into the end of the season, and he waited so long where really they didn't have much of a shot to move on. Now, I love the hire of Arthur Smith. I think that'll put them right there with Todd Monken, but Todd Monken did a lot of great things with Lamar too to help him excel and win the MVP last year. So you got to give him a ton of credit. And I think Zach Orr is going to do an unbelievable job with that defense and keep them in line with what we've seen in recent years. It's a 1A, 1B for me. I think Stefanski has to be 3 then in that race. And then unfortunately, that puts Zach Till at 4. But I mean, I don't know, because Zach Taylor's 1 year they go to a Super Bowl. But Stefanski's done, I mean, the job he did this past year with 5 different quarterbacks and all that, the way his defense has been too, Jim Schwartz that hire, like we start factoring all that in, I think, I don't know, it's tough not to pick against Stefanski and what he did at least last year.
Well, this is why I would push back on that. And even though Stefanski was coach of the year, like you said, Zach Taylor, back-to-back years, AFC Championship game, Super Bowl, right? Joe Burrow goes down. Now, I know we're not factoring in players, but the Bengals with the backup quarterback were still in the playoff hunt.
What are they without Burrow?
What do you mean? They were 1 game out of the playoffs.
With this year. But I'm saying, look at what the Browns did.
Yeah. I mean, I think you got to put some respect on what Lou Anarumo's done with that defense too, though.
For sure.
Yeah, he's done a good job. It wasn't Jim Schwartz and what he did with the Browns defense.
I mean, but again, we're not talking personnel, right? Because the personnel is a lot better on the defensive side for Cleveland than it is for the Bengals, if we're going to go that route.
I think the undersold thing here is, and it affects the whole division, Brian Callahan leaving the Bengals.
Yeah, that hurts.
For the Titans and taking Bill Callahan from the Browns. Those are two big pieces. Like, how's that? Zach Taylor's been calling the plays, but Brian Callahan has a lot of input and works closely with Joe Burrow. How does that offense look with no Callahan? And then how does this Browns rushing attack look with no Brian? I mean, Bill Callahan is like the best offensive, one of the best offensive line coaches in the history of football. Like, that's a big difference for them in Cleveland. I'll say Harbaugh 1, Tomlin 2, Stefanski 3, Taylor 4.
Yeah, it's hard for me to pick between John Harbaugh and Tomlin. Just because, you know, Todd Monken first year did an amazing job. I think to Brady's point, Arthur Smith will change a lot of the stuff that Pittsburgh did. And people say it'll be more conservative, but they won't turn the ball over as much. And then I got to give the edge to Terrell Austin just because he's done it before. Zach Orr, I do believe, is a superstar. He played when me and Brady played, and he's a superstar on the rise. But I believe he's a first-time DC. So I think Terrell Austin has done it before. So I would have to give the edge to Mike Tomlin's staff.
By the way, I just can't pick the Bengals over the Browns. So there's that.
You said what?
I can't pick the Bengals over the Browns. So
right, I knew there was a reason.
Let's head to the NFC North, where I think – you know what? Sneaky top three here in terms of, like, I don't see how you're not picking Dan Campbell and the Lions first, considering they retained Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, and Matt LaFleur just had to fire his DC, although he brought Jeff Hafley, the BC head coach.
That was a big surprise. I didn't see that. I'll just pick.
Exactly how you see it is how I'd rank it. There you go.
That's accurate. But I agree with that. I mean, so you're saying with Matt LaFleur, even the success that they've had, right, kind of gets washed. And I know we're not talking about players, but Aaron Rodgers not being there anymore. And then to Will's point, right, they fired their DC, even though they went to the divisional round. I would rank it how it is, too. I think Brian Flores did a hell of a job last year with that. That was that defense the year before. Oh, my God. It was abysmal. For what he did, for what the talent that was on that current roster, he did a hell of a job. I would rank it how it is.
And those players, the Vikings players, talked about how they started to learn the system like 5 or 6 weeks in, and that's when that defense really took off. And I think you saw that. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a gap, too, between 3 and 4. Like, let's just see what Eberflus and that staff can do. But the defense for the Bears, much improved. I think Eberflus is an example where you want to be a little patient maybe. See what Dan Campbell started 0-10-1 and then 1-6 his first 2 years, and look how it paid off. Okay. Let's rank that is all the divisions, right?
I think so.
Let's rank our top 5 coaching staffs. Brady, do you want to give yours really quick? I understand you have to go to the little boys' room.
I do. No, not the little boys room. I have to go on HQ. So I
doesn't go on air.
How did I have this? What did I put? I the exact same as Leger. I looked at the list. I was like, yeah, it's the exact same. There's not going to be much comment for fodder here. So,
so you had Chiefs, Lions, 49ers, Eagles, Browns. Anybody correct. Want to change? Okay.
Nope.
Yeah. Right. That was my list.
I like that list. I mean, the Chiefs are obviously the number one. I think I would have the Chargers maybe in the mix because I love Jim Harbaugh. But generally speaking, I think that's a great list as well. Brady, you can see on CBS Sports HQ. You can see dudes there too. You can see me there too. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. For dudes, for Brady, I'm Brinson. We'll see you guys later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.